Episode 7 of the Occupational Safety Leadership Podcast featuring Tom Cicich. Tom is a true titan of the safety field. He has almost 50 years of experience and former president of the ASSP. Tom and I will sit down today and talk about how to get executives on board. Every so often, you just get that one person that you just can't seem to try and convince, you can't seem to try and reach. So we sit down and talk about a couple of strategies, talk about some practical examples and some lessons learned. So please sit back and enjoy my interview with Tom. So on today's podcast, we have Tom Cicich. Tom, tell me if I said that right. I've always struggled with your last name.
It's real. You were very close. Cicich.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Thank you. So, and Tom, if you could tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I've been in the safety profession for, I'm now in my 51st year. So I've been doing this quite a few years. I'm an engineer by degree, industrial engineer. But early in my career, had the responsibility for working with a group of industries, helping them to comply with what then was a new law called OSHA. And I found that literally became a calling for me. It allowed me to combine my technical skills as well as to work with people and to benefit people and to benefit the organizations they work for. So I found it a very, very fulfilling and certainly rewarding profession over the years.
Oh, yes. I know that. So I had a couple of classes with you probably about the 2005 timeframe or so. And that's what made me to kind of sit down and kind of think about the people in my life that kind of helped me to just to kind of get my mind thinking differently, as opposed to when I was a young man, it was all about rules and compliance. But as I got older, I realized that I probably should have focused on the soft skills a lot more than focus on the hard skills. And that's kind of what leaders do, is that they kind of sit down, they figure out what it's going to take to get from point A to point B and make it happen. So, and while we're talking about leaders, let's talk about, have you ever had a experience where you've had a hard time getting a leader on board with safety? And I don't want any names, of course, or any company names.
Well, of course, in 50 years, the answer is yes. we all have run into, and you know, I'd almost subdivide the answer in that, you know, the reason for not being on board, and if when you decide how am I going to work with this person, how am I going to help this person along to understand the value and the importance, it's important to understand their motivation. And you know, I think fortunately most of the people that have had that I don't want to use the word struggle. I will use the word struggle for the last type of person, but most of the people that, you know, don't quite get it, don't quite understand, it's not necessarily because they're purposefully against it. They don't understand. They really don't understand the value. And I can think of one CEO who was a wonderful man, but he had come up through the organization on the sales and marketing side. He was terrific at what he did. And but getting his support, he just didn't understand that safety and health, like any function, had to be managed. It just doesn't happen. And he had certainly was had no reservations about doing the right thing, but he didn't understand that. I think he just thought it, you know, sure. Who wants to get hurt?
right. Exactly.
And you know, why, from his perspective, why don't the, you know, tell people don't get hurt? That's such a normal way of doing things. So I think in those kinds of cases, and again, fortunately, most of the situations I've dealt with where there was an understanding gap, let's call it that, they didn't quite understand. And in that particular case, I kind of went back and tried to understand how where he came from in the organization. Again, he's in sales and marketing. He'd been a sales rep. He'd been out on the street peddling pharmaceuticals. And turns out in the pharmaceutical industry, I argue he had the most dangerous job of any worker in that company, whether the chemical side or the research side. I mean, we dealt with nasty, viruses. I mean, this pandemic really brought back some memories, of work we did. The company had two Nobel laureates in virology research. Who discovered AZT. So I mean, some nasty stuff. I mean, chemicals and like any organization, you had to manage those. But the area that where we had fatalities and people injured and losses were people driving vehicles, people on the street where you can't control the environment. And so, I used that. And the training and we had trouble getting approval to do some training for the sales reps, which meant they weren't on the field selling. And eventually the discussion got to him, and he thought for a second. He said, "Wait a minute, I when I was in this situation, I had to go through 3 days of training. What's the problem?" And I'm going, "Yeah, that's it." And so it was really kind of to get their support is to help them understand what's necessary, and sometimes it's also try what's the value of this. In that particular case, we had data to show how many traffic accidents that the reps were having. Essentially, we're paying bumper cars with their fleet vehicle. At one point, 25% of the vehicles in the organization were involved in some kind of loss in a given year. Now, some of that they were getting keyed in an inner city parking garage at a hospital. But moreover than not, I mean, there were fender benders and things like that, which took the car off the street, which kept the sales rep off the street. So it's a matter of connecting the a lot again, a lot of the just can't get this person on board. It's helping them understand what's necessary, why we need their support, and what the value of having an improved safety record is, tangible, intangible cost, all the reputation, liability, all the things that we as safety professionals understand the value of an effective safety management system. So that, I always found that kind of person, that was a lot easier. And sometimes what you needed, I was always a big advocate of finding a champion, of who maybe their peer or somebody at their peer level at the C-suite that you could get a connection with. You're not going to have a connection as nice as it would be. The fact is, you're not going to have a connection with everybody in the C-suite.
Exactly.
Just not going to happen. But so what you do is try to build a connection with someone. For whatever reason, whatever that connection is, and then let them be your champion, your advocate at that level. And I can think of again, every organization kind of look for that, but one it just happened to be the general counsel, which excuse me, obviously has an interest in safety for multiple reasons, but turned out his father had worked at DuPont. And I've kind of lost my view of where DuPont is these days. I mean, it's a very different company, obviously, but certainly back in 20, 30 years ago, they were the leader in many ways. And so, he he understood. I think he actually, if I recall, he actually worked for summer, maybe a summer job in DuPont. He understood what a safety culture looked like, the value. And so when talking with him about the importance and the value and the necessity, there was no sell. There was no hard sell. In fact, there were certain times where the roles were reversed, that he was leaning on me, we need to do more. It's like, amen. So that was another tool that I found useful, and I'm sure that's always a tool that's available. In other words, find a champion, somebody. And the research and development people we had, it was almost like a university campus and an academic environment. And sometimes a harder sell, but there was one gentleman who had been involved in a serious lab accident. And so he was a very passionate advocate. And so there was another champion. So, that was a tool that I found very useful in making that connection. Now, as I said in the beginning, there's, this is, the real world. It's not always an easy sell. As much as I hate to say it, there are people who are really recalcitrant about the responsibility for safety. Now, I should be very clear. They're not saying, have these people, I don't care if they're hurt or not. They're not doing that.
Right,
And I'm
right.
sure there are workplaces where that attitude, but I've always worked for really good companies, and people, take the right, certainly have the right attitude, about worker safety and health. But I could probably count on one hand over my 35 year corporate career, where you really ran into a person that just didn't want to take responsibility. And again, sometimes it was lack of knowledge, lack of understanding. You think of one gentleman that he just felt that safety was not his responsibility. It was, the safety department's responsibility. And that just kept coming out over and over. And, unfortunately, in that type of environment, you could almost see it coming. And probably the worst in-plant accident we ever had occurred on his watch in his facility, for all the reasons that, we wanted him to take responsibility for worker safety and health, on the people that he had the responsibility to lead. And sometimes, and again, this is rare, but you have to have a knockdown drag out and say, let's take it up. And which if you ever get to that point, I mean, those were not pleasant situations, but they always, in good organizations, you're always going to win that argument. And I mean, again, as long as you're making a realistic request, or and have your act together. But if and again, it sadly, that one became I don't want to say I told you so situation, because nobody wins in
Right,
that
right.
situation. It was just a bad, and that, everybody, and ultimately the plant manager, who was the line head, he ended up, getting, paying, a price, for this particular issue within his organization. And but it came down, the frontline manager, the one that we had the most difficulty with. So, I think when you have those situations, I mean, obviously you do everything you can at the individual level to try to help them understand, what the issue is, why this is important, what their concerns are. You gotta have to listen to what their concerns are, potentially valid concerns. And address everything you can. But I don't want to, as I said, in 35, 40 years, I mean, I can count on my, very, very few cases that you know really we had to escalate to higher levels and literally have knockdown dragouts, you know, behind closed doors meeting, those types of things, which is another part of it. There are times just go in closed door and say, you know, let's, you know, what's it going to take to sort this out? You know, nobody wins with a big spectacle, and I don't want to say a lot of witnesses, but you know, one-on-one, I mean, even at that point, you know, you can say whatever at that point. You know, it might not be a happy conversation, but you at least can have the respect of let's try to hash this out. And at the end, if it doesn't work, then you're going to have to take it up. And again, the organizations I had, there were one or two situations that, you know, we had some issues with line management. And I mean, it was just a tough discussion all the way up the chain. And we had to kind of bring in the legal department, which, you know, they had their own, you know, their own perspective. So yeah, there's a lot of tools in the toolbox and a lot of opportunities to, you know, I think have positive outcomes. You're really looking for win-win solutions, right? You're looking, what's the right decision for the organization? And the right decision for the organization is also going to be the right decision for the people to keep them from being injured and allow the organization to prosper. And nobody prospers when there's injuries and illnesses and ill will. And so, you know, ultimately, even with the difficult people, look for the win-win. You know, what is it? Where's their motivation? What is important to them? You know, salespeople, if you know, good salespeople quickly understand someone they're trying to sell, what's important to them? You know, what is it that they're looking to gain? You know, we're all human beings. We all, you know, look, you know, goal oriented, we're reward oriented. What is it that that the person's looking for? And how do we appeal to that? And everybody's different. And so that's, as a safety professional, when you talked about the soft skills, you develop those, you know, over time and say, okay, how can I appeal to this person? What's important to them? How can, you know, we present this as a win-win?
Right. I have found that over the years, if I could really understand a person, where you talk there and about the motivation and everything else, you can break down those barriers if you know the person is into football or baseball, because you can just start off the talk in that kind of a fashion. You can catch him in the hallway when no one else can hear and listen and talk. So sometimes a little bit of posturing happens in meetings just because people feel their egos are a little threatened, but Absolutely. Behind closed doors are really easy to talk to. So sometimes timing, I found, for me at least, plays a role in kind of how I bring things up to people too.
Yeah, we had a case one time. We put in, I won't go into all the gory details, but we had a job upgrade, a fire system, and you know, it wasn't a cheap job, but the current system was just full holes. You know, there were reliability issues. We were working, you know, I had a guy that we devoted probably 60% of his time just keeping the thing up and running. This is a big, big pharmaceutical, you know, big manufacturing facility, and you know, lots of product going through. And and we put a job in, and the job, you know, we had the engineering review meeting, capital meeting, and of course, you know, there's an example of, you know, that's a non-productive job. You know, you're going to upgrade a fire system, real money that's not being put to productive use. You know, if manufacturing needed a new piece of equipment or maintenance or something, you know, the fire system doesn't help, you know, meet, you know, customer service cost.
Exactly.
Burning down maybe, but you know, on a day-to-day basis, hard to see through that.
Right.
And so it's easy, you know, some of those jobs, and everybody knows this, the safety jobs, sometimes it's really easy to push them to the next budget year. It's one of the reasons why I think it's important, we I'm digressing just slightly, that we, you know, we qualify a lot of our requests in terms of risk, but perhaps a different podcast.
Right, right, right.
But anyway, so, you know, it was the head of North American supply, head of engineering, and they, you know, they made a request, you know, can we push this to the year? And you know, it was big, push it to next year, big room, and head of supply was my boss, and he just, you know, made the decision. He's Tommy. He says, Tommy, that's okay, right? And boom, yeah, let's do it. And next thing I know, everybody's gone, and I'm sitting here holding the bag, no job approved, and I'm going, you know, what just happened?
Right, right. And,
you know, in those days, you know, we had a no smoking facility, and very common now, but this is 20, 25 years ago. And so I knew he always, after a meeting, would make a dash to the parking lot and go for a ride and go for, get a smoke.
Right, right.
And so I'm running down the hall following him. I want to be in that car. And so he jumped in the car, and head of engineering was in the car. So all the decision makers right there. And I said, can I go for a ride with you guys? I need to talk about something. And yeah, come on. And we all had great relationships. So, you know, and that's part of all of this is, you know, if you build those relationships when you don't want to rely on relationships for everything, but you know, when you need it, you need it.
Right.
And so I went for a ride, and at my own personal health, I might say,
right.
being stuck in the car. The side note to all this is, if you recall, maybe I think it was 1993 in North Carolina, there was a chicken processing plant in
Hamilton. Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
That had the doors locked, padlocked, hydraulic line broke loose, hit a hot spot, you know, broke into a fire. 23 people killed.
Mm-hmm.
People, management going to jail, as should be, you know. Anyway. We weren't a chicken processing plant, far from it. But I said, guys, here's the deal. I said, this system's in bad shape. I have to tell you, as your safety professional, your advisor, that the right thing to do is to put this system in. I understand the cost implications, but this is a non-negotiable item in terms of the importance. And I said, just look down the road at, you know, look what happened. And, you know, I don't, you know, we're not anywhere near there, but we all have knowledge of this. And, you know, we're all on the hook for this. You know, despite being the right thing to do, as leaders, we've got, you know, we have knowledge. I can tell you right here sitting that this system is just held together. And you know, it wasn't any discussion after that. You know, the head of supply turned around and he said, yeah, he says, add the job back in. And so,
awesome. Good.
You know, sometimes what were the success factors? Well, relationships, the ability, I mean, again, go offline. I mean, I had kind of been thumped in the public meeting saying, yeah, we're not going to do that. But in private, I was able to get the project approved. And so, you know, it's not about making a spectacle, and it's getting the job done. So there's, you know, some of that just comes with experience, you know, lots of hard knocks. I tell people, you know, if you're a safety professional for a long time, you've got a lot of scars, you know, that have healed over. And but, you know, it's you learn from them and say, okay, I'm not going to let that one happen again.
Right, right, right. I have scars and gray hairs, and I've earned every one of them. All right. Exactly. So, hey, Tom, so we are coming up close to the end. So I did not do a good job of introducing you as a probably the titan of industry out there now. Is there a way that people can connect with you to get more information about the things we talked about today?
Sure. I don't know if you list, emails or I'm on, as you know, on LinkedIn, of call me. I enjoy, as you know, I've done a lot of teaching over the years, and a lot of people have attended class and want to kick around ideas. I'm very clear. I'm not the source of all wisdom and knowledge in this, but I'm always happy to talk through ideas and offer assistance. So I don't know. I don't know what the mechanism is for communicating, who the speakers are, but if any of the contact information, always happy.
Okay, good. And the final question for you, could you tell me your definition of a safety professional?
The definition of a safety professional? I think it's a person that is, it's interesting, it's probably not a real crisp definition, but I can maybe just respond by what I've done. I think what made me successful, and again, I'll build this into the definition, is it's a person that works to enhance the safety of the people under their watch. And that's whether you're whether you're an inspector, like in with OSHA and risk control and insurance, or work in a for-profit, or that, you understand the principles of safety. You understand how to communicate those principles to people. You understand the impacts of what happens when safety isn't properly managed. And it's this bowl of things that all come together, and it's the person that's in that bowl that's taking the leadership. And I'll say that leadership is a component of that. And I know when I was ASSP president, I made very clear that, we are all safety leaders. So a safety professional is a leader that's working with their organization to improve, enhance the safety of the workers to the overall benefit of the organization.
Tom, that is a really good message that I think more safety professionals need to hear. I do run into people who say, "But I'm only a coordinator. I'm just a specialist." And I try to impart on them: you are a leader. You may not feel it, you may not know it, but everybody is looking to you for those answers.
Everybody's looking to you for leadership.
Right. Exactly.
One last thing on that. The book Colin Powell wrote, My American Journey, I always go back to that. I may have even talked about it in that class we had years ago. But he said, leadership is like, and make sure I get this right, leadership and a vacuum. Leadership and nature abhor a vacuum, meaning, in the lack of leadership, when there's a lack of leadership in organizations don't process. And so, organizations look for somebody to fill the vacuum with respect to safety. And most cases, the person that's best qualified to step into that vacuum, if somebody else doesn't, if the leader of the organization, the plant manager, if they're in there leading the charge, go for it. But if there appears to be a vacuum at any point, the safety professional is the person that fills that vacuum.
Exactly. So, with that, Tom, I only covered maybe about a quarter of what I wanted to cover. So I would love to have you back on for, a session 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever it takes to really get through. So if it's okay with you, we'll look at setting up some future stuff and keep on going, trying to help out that next generation, that next safety professional to learn from our, I can't call it wisdom, but to learn from our mistakes at times, our wisdom at times, and some things we've just kind of stumbled into at times. And so just another way for them to get that perspective, to get better in life and help out their companies.
Right.
Tom, thank you so much. And with that, we have industry titan, Tom Sesich. I'm not sure I said that right, Tom.
That was good.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. All right, Tom. Have a safe day, bud. See ya.
Thank you.